Thank you. So today I'm going to talk about a survey we concluded for NIJ last year. This survey was focused on forensic evidence processing in state and local law enforcement agencies. A lot of the information out there is based on forensic backlogs in crime labs, and this particular effort was focused on sort of the other side of the fence. What's going on in law enforcement agencies? How are agencies processing and moving these cases forward? What's the decision making? How is the evidence maintained? And where's maybe some solutions for how some of these things can work more efficiently? So the final report came out in October 2009. It's available on the NIJ website. And there have been some other, one other article that appeared in Criminology and Public Policy based on this work that came out last month. So what do we know about evidence backlogs more generally? As I mentioned, forensic backlogs within crime laboratories are relatively well established. These trends have fluctuated over time. There's some evidence that suggests recent funding through NIJ has resulted in some reductions. But as a whole, the BJS surveys have shown that based in 2002, there was a backlog of over 260,000 cases. And in 2005, the subsequent survey showed that these backlogs increased by a factor of 24%. NIJ also conducted a study earlier in the 2000s that looked at unanalyzed evidence in law enforcement agencies. So these were defined as cases that were unsolved, that had forensic evidence associated with them, but for one reason or another never went to a crime lab for analysis. This earlier study was focused on biological evidence only, and it found that there were over 50,000 unsolved homicides, nearly 170,000 unsolved rapes that contained biological evidence but were never sent to a crime lab. They also estimated about 264,000 unsolved property crime cases that contain biological evidence. So this is sort of the foundation for some of this work. The goal for NIJ was to conduct this survey of law enforcement agencies and also to look at some things in more detail. What type of evidence was involved and what were the different capacity issues for these agencies? So the primary objective was to estimate the number of unsolved violent homicide and rape cases and property cases that contained some form of forensic evidence, not just DNA, but that were not submitted to a crime laboratory for some particular reason. We also look at the estimates of the types of forensic evidence within these cases and also describe the capabilities and procedures in the law enforcement agencies for processing, submitting, and retaining evidence. Today I'm going to focus mainly on the results that look at the unanalyzed cases and then also talk a little bit about the capacity issues within the agencies. A little bit of background on the survey. It was a nationally representative survey. We sampled more than 3,000 state and local law enforcement agencies, all large law enforcement agencies, so all those with 100 more sworn were included with certainty in the sample. And then we selected a stratified sample of smaller agencies. It was a multi-mode data collection, web, mail, fax, telephone. As you can imagine, this is not very easy information to collect. Some law enforcement agencies have this information readily available. They have databases that can pull this out, but many do not. So in those cases, we asked them to approximate these numbers for us as best they could, and we really worked with them to try and come up and try and limit burden on them in providing this information. We also worked with an expert panel of forensic scientists, law enforcement agents, researchers, and others to develop a survey instrument and to follow up with specific agencies as needed. And, of course, NIJ was involved throughout the process. A little bit on response modes. Overall, there was a 73% response rate. Nearly half of the responses came by web, about 40% through hard copy mail, 11% by fax, and we did some telephone follow-up, but very few people completed by phone. Mostly the telephone was used to prompt agencies to respond. And anybody that's sort of followed survey research knows that the web-based responses, which used to be a sort of a lower proportion, have grown steadily over time. This is just a screenshot of the web-based the website where agencies could log on with a unique password enter in information, and the website also allowed us to track responses in real time. So the response rates by agencies, as I mentioned, a 73% response rate overall. Municipal police departments had a 75% response rate, and then state police agencies, 63%. Also, what you see by agency size, those agencies were most likely to respond that were larger. So essentially, smaller sheriff's departments had the lowest response rate overall. So what did the data show? Over a five-year period, we asked about a five-year period from 2003 to 2007, there were an estimated nearly 4,000 estimated homicide cases that contained some form of forensic evidence, but that were not submitted to a crime lab for analysis. And this represented about 14% of all estimated unsolved homicide cases. For rapes, about 27,500 estimated rapes that, again, contained some form of forensic evidence but were not submitted to a laboratory. This represented about 18% of unsolved cases. For property crimes, nearly 5 million, which is not a surprise considering how many property crimes, the sheer number of property crimes out there, and that represented about 23% of unsolved cases with unanalyzed forensic evidence. So the numbers are fairly large. The magnitude of these is debatable in terms of the sheer scale, based on the amount of evidence that flows through the system. Some folks have looked at these numbers and said, well, these aren't very surprising. In fact, they could be a little bit low, whereas others have had the opposite viewpoint. When you look at the types of forensic evidence contained in these backlog cases, and this is just for homicides and rape cases, about 40% contained some form of DNA evidence. Trace evidence was included in about 27% of these cases. 26% contained some form of latent prints, and firearm tool marks in 23%. So DNA, while not involved in all these cases, was the most likely form of evidence to be contained in these unanalyzed homicide and rape cases. When looking at the breakouts by agency size, as one could imagine, larger police agencies for the unanalyzed homicides accounted for more than 80%, but the same was not necessarily true for especially rape and property cases. So smaller agencies, those with less than 50 officers, accounted for about 30% of those cases. Collectively, agencies with 100 or less sworn accounted for about 40% of the unanalyzed rape cases. So the perception that large agencies, that we can just focus on large agencies to improve some of these issues, I think is misleading, especially for rape cases. And this just shows a little bit more about agency size. By agency type, again, you see that municipal police departments accounted for most of the homicide and rape cases. And I guess most notably for state police agencies, they accounted for about 1 in 10 unsolved rape cases. So what are some reasons why this evidence isn't moving through the system? Perhaps the most common reason was that there was no suspect identified in the case. And so in some instances, this may be an issue with the investigator, either not fully understanding or maybe being some type of other instruction, some type of procedural issue that may not allow them to submit the case forward. In some cases, there was the issue with the prosecutor. The analysis had not been requested by the prosecutor. 15% indicated that was a reason the evidence hadn't been submitted. And also in 12%, the suspect had been identified but not formally charged. So these investigative type issues are affecting the flow of evidence in some of these cases. Laboratory resource and timeliness issues, while not as prevalent, were also noted. The inability of the laboratory to produce timely results was reported in 11% of the instances. Insufficient funding for analysis, 9%. And the fact that the lab will not accept evidence due to backlog issues in 6%. And remember, these are based on the perceptions of the law enforcement agency. And finally, some other factors that influenced, inhibiting factors that influenced the submission of evidence. 24% indicated the suspect had been adjudicated without the forensic evidence. 17% reported that they were uncertain of the usefulness of forensic evidence in that particular case, and 2% were uncertain where to send the evidence for analysis. A little bit about evidence retention. We also ask about evidence retention policies within the law enforcement agency. Less than half of agencies reported having such a policy for preserving biological evidence in cases in which the defendant was found guilty. 1 in 5 agencies were unsure about such a policy. And for instances where the agency did have a policy, the investigating law enforcement agency was responsible in the vast majority of the cases for storing that evidence. The same was true for unsolved cases. So the bottom line is that in almost all instances, the vast majority of incidents, both unsolved and solved cases, the burden of retaining, storing, and tracking that evidence normally comes down to the law enforcement agency. So what are some of the study implications, some of the more general generalizable issues that come out from this study? One is certainly that law enforcement agencies continue to face substantial forensic backlogs for homicide, rape, and also property crime cases. 1 in 7 unsolved homicide cases, 1 in 5 rape cases, and 1 in 4 property cases that contain some form of forensic evidence were not submitted to a crime lab for analysis. Those backlogs were not just limited to large agencies, especially for rape cases, which is an important point. It also indicates that there's some additional training that's required and enhanced policies regarding the use of forensic evidence. It shouldn't be just up to one investigator or a single person within an agency to make all these decisions. Some more checks and balances about how cases move forward. I should also mention that policies that really move to the completely other side and that require all evidence be submitted under all circumstances, I think are also a little bit suspect in terms of really preserving the resources available in the system. Some law enforcement agencies continue to have the mindset that forensic evidence is beneficial primarily for prosecuting crimes, not just for developing new leads and investigations. And again, sometimes there's procedural issues within the crime lab, within the prosecutor's office, that really contributes to that mindset. Another really important point was about information systems and the ability to track evidence within the law enforcement agencies and also as it moved on to the crime lab and then to adjudication. Only about 4 in 10 law enforcement agencies reported having a computerized system in place capable of tracking forensic evidence in inventory. So this is a major area of need. We really need to get better at how we track evidence and how we, especially as it moves from one part of the system to the other. Also, more guidelines, documentation, and resources for evidence processing. Policies must take into account the resources available in law enforcement agencies. As I mentioned, in most instances, they're responsible for tracking and maintaining this evidence over time. And really, more assistance and more resources need to be provided to allow them both to maintain this evidence and also better understand what evidence can be discarded. Finally, we need so this is just a review of the training, creating computerized systems, improving storage capacity, but then also a system-wide approach to improve coordination among the police, the labs, and the prosecutors. This could include dedicated staff that are responsible for case management, regular teams for case review, and computerized systems, but really a coordinated approach to looking at this as opposed to each entity looking at their forensic evidence and as it moves, it becomes someone else's problem. So a more coordinated approach around how this evidence is thought through and placing more checks and balances to decide what evidence should proceed and what would have the most utility for solving and investigating these crimes. Thank you.